Well, welcome everybody. This is a no tech talk. So if you're looking for technology, feel free to go and get a coffee. I've been at 15 tech ads. And when I saw my profile on the web, I thought, man, I wish that wasn't there. Gray hair and a little bit of years under the belt. Who here has been to more than 10 tech ads? I win, so I get a speaker, okay? No, you don't. I get a speaker. So over the 15 years or so that I've been to TechEd, I went from software development, architecture and talks and processes to enterprise architecture, and my current role is as an enterprise architect. And this talk here is really about the journey at a mix of places, but mostly what you could expect in a small, medium-sized organization if you ended up being given the job of an enterprise architect and you had to figure out what you needed to do in the first 3 months, in the first 100 days, and where perhaps you would end up or you could target at the end of 2 years, which is basically what happened in my current role. So I hope you get some good experiential tips from the talk, and I hope to get through so we can get questions and answers. I have three questions. I have three gifts throughout the presentation. When you see a star, get ready. I had to mark up the slide so I didn't forget. Who hears tweets? Who is an active tweeter? I think in, 3 or 4 years that I had a Twitter account, today was the first time I tweeted with a purpose. So if you haven't seen, I suggest you have a look because there could be a hint for a Bluetooth speaker there. Who is a software architect in here? Cool. Who is a solution architect? So we're going to change a little bit, so about half the room. Who is an enterprise architect? Who of the enterprise architects here would say that you do, 50% of your time talking about business problems? Okay, half of the enterprise architects. This is more or less what my talk is. So the agenda is quite simple. It is first 100 days or so, and then I'll talk a little bit about what happened in the beginning of the 100 weeks, and then I will fast forward to the end and talk a little bit about where I got to. And the mismatch is quite interesting as well. But before we start, who has been to one of my other presentations in the past 2 or 3 years? Okay, so there are a few hands. I'll repeat a little bit, so bear with me, just in terms of the toolkit I have. So I'll start with a working definition of architecture, but in particular, enterprise architecture from my point of view. I love that one was Norm Judah on 2011, so a few years back, but really defined that 100 days to 100 weeks journey that I had, not only in the current job, but in previous roles as well, as a contractor or as a consultant. So that's my job, really. I'm trying to provide a little bit of my experience to try to predict the uncertainty that is in the environment and try to control that uncertainty to deliver something back to the business or to my clients. So interesting things happen in that journey, and that uncertainty is the main thing that I believe, the experience to predict uncertainty is the main thing that I think people are paying me for as an architect. I need to have opinions. So I'm looking to provide well-informed opinions to the business and to the customer and provide some direction into what we should be doing next, short-term, long-term. In creating capability, I use the open group work that was done by Capgemini, I think, quite a few years ago, published by the Open Group, where they defined the basic capabilities of enterprise architecture. So you can go back to the slides later on, but I will use that to frame what was the capability I had to build, or a capability that you, if you get into an enterprise architecture role, should build in your organization, and what elements of that capability you need or you should be focusing on will vary depending on your organization and the level of maturity of your organization. It is a journey, and it's a long journey. That's the maturity model, and everybody has a maturity model, but it is a maturity model for enterprise architecture, and it's based on an enterprise architecture assessment framework. So who is here from one of the big five or consulting companies? Nobody? Oh, you're kind of hiding there. Probably something like this: if you were to be assessed by an organization on where you are with enterprise architecture, they will come with an element of that and look for elements of that. So pays for you to be familiar with that if you're in your job, just in case somebody asks. The journey in most organizations, if you get to a level two, you're doing really, really well. If you get to a level three, start publishing papers and start raising your arm, because some of the big five might hire you and pay you big bucks to provide advice to others. But it's a long journey, so don't expect to make too much difference in the first 100 days, for example. This is more about this talk. So I'm not talking about enterprise IT architecture. I am going to talk mostly about enterprise architecture. And of course, IT is a key element of that, but enterprise architecture is not enterprise IT architecture. There's a place for everything, but my role in the basis of this talk is about enterprise architecture, including IT, but not necessarily just enterprise IT architecture. Unfortunately, when you get to the frameworks and when you get to some of the tools, they provide a lot of support to you for enterprise IT architecture, but not so much for enterprise architecture. And interesting, when you look for reference architectures in general, just search for the government website as one of them, Victoria, CIO, enterprise architecture there. Most of the reference architectures, if not all, are about enterprise IT architecture. Common operating environment, SOA, and then you can get lost into the whole IT world without getting too much feedback on, okay, but what if I want to provide some guidance to my business in the business, from a business point of view? You might get some help with processes from people like APQC, have frameworks and standard models for processes, but it starts to fragment a lot in there. So don't expect too much help on the business architecture side. There's quite a bit in terms of application architecture, solutions architecture, and quite a lot in terms of IT architecture. And the interesting thing is, in the current IT architecture, if you have your common operating environment and you have your data center and your securities and your models and everything related to your IT environment and your IT portfolio, what are you doing about the cloud? Because that's disrupting everything, and you should be rethinking that whole side of the story of the actual domain. So be careful and be always aware of the whole breadth of enterprise architecture and architecture in general. Part of my toolkit, and if you've been to other talks I gave in TechEd or elsewhere, you would know that I love the enterprise business motivation model. There was, Nick Malik was here last year, the year before, and he talked about that as well. So it's basically managed and published by him and is an extension of the Open Group business motivation model. And he puts a little bit of more thought in some aspects of the motivation elements, so I love that model. But centered on the enterprise motivation model is the idea of capability. And again, you know me, and I love capability modeling. And luckily for me, I'm in good company because Gartner is pushing that quite strongly, and Forrester is pushing that quite strongly as well. So it's much more common language in architecture these days that it used to be maybe 2 or 3 years ago when Microsoft started talking about Fusion and the whole capability modeling involved with Fusion. But EBMM is not enough, and of course you need the IT architecture. And what we have done in WaterCare with the basic meta model for architecture inside the organization is we picked up TOGAF. And TOGAF is really, really good for enterprise IT architecture. So in a way, we kind of bolted the enterprise motivation model with the TOGAF IT architecture, and that's what we're running with at the moment. So the idea of business services, we adapted that a little bit, but that doesn't matter. But the technological components, the logical technical components, the physical technical components, the logical application components, et cetera, are very much part of the language in WaterCare these days, and that's basically our motivation model. EBMM bolted with TOGAF. So that's really the core of my toolkit. So if you get the enterprise motivation model and you get TOGAF and you start talking to the business, you need a way of putting all these things together. So the other part of my toolkit is this idea of value streams. And don't confuse value streams with value chains. They are different concepts. And if you want a better definition of value streams that is beyond a super process, just go to the Business Architecture Guild website, William Ulrich, and have a look. He is a very big proponent of value streams. But what they do is they basically orchestrate capabilities in a super process. And that's really powerful when you're talking to your business, to your organization, and you want to put what they do in the context of how they do. So in WaterCare, we talk about meter to cash business processes. So I have a value stream, which is meter to cash. And in there, you have the individual steps, and I can map the capability model that we developed into that in heat map. So what you're looking at there, for example, is the a part of what we've done within the 100 days-ish, which is, if we looked at the managed complaints part of service requests, how well supported by technology are we? So that's basically that heat map. And you look at the capabilities, and some of them are red, some of them are green, and that's basically our technical debt. So really helpful to get to a good conversation with their business. In the center of this picture, you see the ADM from TOGAF. And if you are a really strong TOGAF operator or TOGAF user, and you have, for one reason or another, implemented that, and you need to put all your architecture processes within that context, fine, go and keep doing it, because there's nothing wrong with it. If you want to probably oversimplify the whole thing, it's an oldie but goodie from my Microsoft days, which is the solution framework process cycle for enterprise architecture. And it's just, you do the same with the ADM. You basically iterate. And the key point here is you have to iterate. Don't start with a big reference architecture exercise in the organization that you're going to define it, spend 12 months doing it, and then you're going to publish, because nobody's going to read it. Lesson number one, over a number of years contracting, write 150 pages for an ISSP, and you're the only one, and maybe the guy that review it to check, you know, spelling mistakes and Portuguese embedded in an English text, they'll probably be the only ones that will read in detail. The business, your sponsor, they will read the executive summary if you're lucky, but they are looking for a solution to a problem, and I'll get back to that later on. So these tools and frameworks and development methods are great to guide you, but only use it as a guide. Make sure you're delivering value, which is really the core of these first 100 days in any organization. So, little star. What did I think I had? So I was asked, hey, do you want to come to and do this job here? And I thought about it, a small, medium-sized organization, you know, does something useful, treats water, gets your rubbish and treats back and dump in the harbor in a way that doesn't kill the fish. And it's really cool, okay. And it's a small team, nobody there. Oh, I'm alone. So I really can say stuff because I'll be my own boss and hopefully people will listen to me. So I thought I had a really cool job. And I still think I have a really cool job. I thought, what a care given the integration that went through for the super city would have some issues with the core systems. So I was going to find some really good core systems, really bad core systems, and I'm probably going to find a lot of mishmash in the middle and bad integration and business processes that are broken, et cetera. So no surprises there. And I thought I was going to find a pretty new infrastructure. So my IT architecture, I thought, ooh, that's sorted, because we just went through a big technology refresh, dumped XP, this is 2 years ago, dumped XP, new management infrastructure. That's going to be no worries for at least, you know, a couple of years. So question number one for a nice, shiny Microsoft USB. What do you think did I find? Where did I make a mistake? Assuming, very good. You get it. Oops, thank you. Oh, I was told once that in the US, if you throw things to the audience, you are probably going to be sued. So because we have ACC, I'm going to throw the speakers, okay? I assumed a lot of things. So the main thing I assumed here was the shiny infrastructure, in a way. Because I thought, and this was my starting point from a capability model, I thought, oh, yes, I will have to manage the architecture roadmap. I will have to manage the future. And I don't need to worry about the present. Now, who knows what happened for the super city to actually happen in Oakland. So what was the period of time between, yep, you guys need to be operating together as a single entity to now I have to operate? Anybody remembers? It's about a year. So all that infrastructure came together in a bit of a earthquake mixed with tsunami and a volcano underneath. So it was shiny, but it was ready to be scratched and to explode from under your feet. It's not as bad. It does work, and it's really well put together, but there are bits and pieces of the infrastructure that suffer from the usual problem that you all have when you have to put something in place in a finite period of time. So you make design decisions, you make compromises in terms of business processes you're automating, and you will have to fix that later on. So the infrastructure works really well, but the bits and pieces that we haven't implemented and now we have to implement. So that's what I call the technical debt from an infrastructure point of view. But in creating the capability for enterprise architecture, and what okay, I thought, I have to manage my architecture roadmap, and I'll have to give quite a bit of focus from the point of view of contributing to program and project management, which are elements that an EA will have to do it. So that medium, long-term view of the roadmap for the organization. I would have to set up my practice, fundamentals, and I wasn't too worried about the team because it was just me. So we had really good one-on-ones for about 2 years and really robust conversations when usually we go running by myself. I had to manage the baseline. I had to define what I had from both an enterprise IT architecture as well as a business architecture and what the business actually does under the surface. So what I did find was that idea of technical debt and the fact that we did project one really, really well from both a business point of view as well as an IT point of view on the 10th of November, I think. WaterCare was operating as Oakland Council was operating, but with a lot of things under the surface that needed addressing. And that's basically what we're doing today. And in addition to that, of course, you had what probably most of you have, A project delivery lifecycle that's not that mature or needs fine-tuning to the organization. You have a solution delivery lifecycle that's also not that fit for purpose and needs fine-tuning to probably become more agile and deliver value quickly. So we have that as well. But on top of that, because of that focus on the day one, we also had to have the business was also very hungry for new systems. So imagine we got eight, I don't think we had eight, but let's say 6 to 8, I can't remember the exact number, of what we call the legacy network operators for water coming together into a single company. And people coming from different councils, because all the retail water organizations were run by the council. But the councils, while the old water care managed the wholesale side of the water delivery and wastewater treatment. So they all came together, and they all had different systems, different reports, different support for their business. And in some of the LNOs, that was really good. A particular aspect of it was really good, and others not so good. And then the other LNO had some really good stuff here, but didn't match what they had. They all came together. They need to operate together. So there was a lot of point solutions, perhaps, and especially information that wasn't quite available to the new entity once all the systems came together. So they were really hungry for system support. And the main thing that hunger for business support reflected on was on the program of work, which was a list. Was quite high. So who here works in an organization that has a pipeline of projects that they need to manage, right? Okay, keep your hands up. Keep your hands up. Of you, how many of you actually like that pipeline? So it is a pipeline. Sometimes it doesn't reflect reality at all because it's just something that somebody needs out of context, maybe in the context of a particular business unit, but out of context for the organization, or you know, different element or different wishes that could be matched by a third one that at the surface doesn't look anything like each other, right? So, you know, same in water care. So what you need to do to start with is EBMM is your friend with TOGAF underneath to support you. You need to understand where people are coming from. So in the early days, first thing I did is, not first thing, but one of the first things I did was I picked up, well, I had to develop a capability model first for water care. So I put that together. And then I went out with the portfolio manager that now had just joined, new lady as well. And we started talking. And we basically drew these pictures. So what is core for you? What is strategic for you? What is supporting for you? So we had this meeting prior to issuing the revised program of work for IT. We had this conversation with them. They had no IT in the conversation at all. And you know, towards the conversation, the system and the wish list come back, and you try to put that in context again. But we just wanted to find out what was important to them. I still refer to these pictures. They are kind of folded next to my desk, probably once a month, probably once every 2 months, to get the context of conversations that are going on. And for me, that was very, very valuable. And then we had a conversation as well around what are the key issues for you in terms of processes, what are the key issues in terms of the applications, what's important to your business unit from a success metrics, et cetera. That's basically the EBMM, the motivation model conversation in a nutshell. We did this in an hour and a half sometimes, if we had to come back and validate anything. And it has been invaluable. So if you haven't had that conversation with people, go out and do it. Because from an enterprise architecture point of view, that will give you a lot of things you can mine later on in terms of nuggets that you can put things into context. And even play back to them, why are you doing this project when you said that that project was really not strategic and not core to you? So why are we doing that instead of doing this one? right, and playback. So it was very important for us to get the business understanding very quickly. So the second thing we did was to try to get a handle on how the underlying IT infrastructure was structured and how we were supporting those business capabilities that the business required. So we used TOGAF again and defined a service catalog. We defined our business services. We defined our technical services. And we use that basic set today still to drive some activity in terms of increasing level of maturity of the services we provide and increasing the level of efficiency out of the IT infrastructure on the other end and our applications, et cetera. So again, that provided the context for IT that matched the context of the business. So different conversations, but I have two contexts now that I can use to drive the initiatives forward. And at least, even if I don't write the 150-page document, I have in the mind of the people that work with me that kind of IT strategy that I can play back, right? And I know what I'm doing. By the way, we have written that, so in a small document. So what that gave us was probably the first iteration of a good asset management plan for WaterCare. And we did the same for the council before that. So I kind of had done one earlier and I knew what I had to do. Now, who here has in your IT organization an asset management plan that is linked to the services you provide? Good, excellent. For you that don't and you have the ability to do it, do it. Pick up your services, look at them, look at your crystal ball and see what, try to assess how much of those services might change in 3 or 5 years. Don't go beyond that because it's a waste of time. And then look at the technology underneath those services and the systems you have, not, you know, Windows Server 2008 R2, but, you know, I have a data center and I have database infrastructure that is my technical services supporting my applications and providing a financial management system or financial management service back to finance. Do that kind of linkage and see, am I okay? Am I really good or am I really bad? And if I'm really bad, how much money do you think I have to spend? How much money do you think I have to spend if I'm okay? You know, create a little investment profile over 3 to 5 years. Now you have your budget over 3 to 5 years. Linked to the services you provide, to the levels your business wants you to provide. It's not a big exercise, especially if you don't need to write a huge document to support that. But it's very, very valuable to help you with your annual budgeting cycle. And we've done that, and we have kind of iteration 3.5, I think, of our asset management plan. And as I mentioned, it's a journey. Now we're going to start articulating those, and I can now bring in the cloud into the picture, the fact that I want to buy platform services rather than infrastructure as a services, and what is the impact of that in the investment profile for the organization. We are an asset-rich organization. We are the top 5 companies in New Zealand in terms of value of assets managed. So we're very large from that point of view, and you imagine why, right? We have big dams, we have big landowners, we have big pipes on the ground, big pumping stations, everything is big. Until it gets to your meter, and that's usually what fails. But I can reflect that back to the organization. And finance now is quite interesting. It's very interesting the fact that, hang on, you're saying that we might not have a data center? So where am I going to attach my asset label to so I can depreciate that? So that's a really interesting conversation to have with finance if you're moving to the cloud. What am I attaching that depreciation ticket to if we don't have anything and I'm paying per month? Sorry? Yes, but they don't like that, right? It becomes an operation expense. It's the same. We are an asset-rich organization. We like to buy assets. We have good line of credit. We have big things. We know how to do that really, really well. So how can I do it? So it's an interesting conversation in its own right, but I digress. Right, quick wins. So we managed to include some interesting business initiatives into the discussion. We did our initial assessment of the technical debt. That's, you know, related to me finding what I wasn't expect to find. But if I thought about it, it was probably expected. We put the initial governance in place, and we had a portfolio review that now made a little bit more sense in terms of the management of the IT assets. So that was our first plan for IS. And we, as we did in the council before that, we used the idea of plan for IS. It's the watercat plan for information systems or information services. It's not the information services strategic plan. It's the plan the organization has for information services and for information systems. And I'm pushing that because I want the conversation to be about us having that enterprise view rather than us developing a plan for IS that people might be tempted to consider just being an IT thing. Right, so now to the real work. So I decided with my team that we wanted a really pragmatic approach, and we wanted to build this architecture in increments that were fit for purpose for the organization, but also the organization could consume as we go along and not be shocked by this guy coming in and trying to change everything, which wasn't my style anyway. And I wanted to mitigate the technical debt. I had to mitigate the technical debt. So the rest of the time was, well, I had to start by adjusting the focus. So that's where I started. And soon I realized that, well, I need to work much closer to the business to get that portfolio that was a wish list into something that makes sense and is more aligned to what WaterCare needs to do, what the organization needs to do. And we have a very clear statement of intent for WaterCare. You can go to the website and download it, and we have all the KPIs that we're measured by. And they're all public, and they're all reported every year. So I have a really good starting point from this is what the organization needs to do to deliver value to Oakland. But I also had to contribute to solution selection now, because I thought I had my shiny infrastructure. So behind that solution selection is creating that infrastructure, reviewing that infrastructure so that it's more fit for purpose than it was before. And that is the technical infrastructure as well as the application portfolio that is supporting the business. So it's not just the IT side, but it's the information services, information system side as well. And because the architecture team was me, I have one person working with me at the moment, but that was after 2 years. Because the architecture team was me, I had to do solution architecture as well. So, you know, I really like solution architecture. So it didn't bother me, but I had to spend probably half of my time into solution architecture. So we had to adjust the plan. So we went beyond the wish list and I used the conversations we had before and tried to structure in a way that was going to address some core business problems as well as some core IT problems. In doing that, you have to consider balance. It's very easy to come with a red pen and cross all the things that are IT related. Like we have, I don't know, improvement of service management inside IT was, you know, one of the projects in the IT side of the plan. And okay, you get pressure by budget, and what do you do? That looks big. Hang on. It doesn't do us any good because probably it's not going to help us with the run side of it, or it's not going to help us with the grow, or with the growing of our capability to service our business better. So you can't just pass the line in there. So Gartner talks about that split, 66, 20, 14, in terms of run, grow, and transform. And if you look for the report, you get the description of what those things mean. So for a shiny Bluetooth speaker. What do you think and why? What do you think the split is for WaterCare? I'll make it easy. How much of Transform do you think is in our program of work these days? Sorry? Here, you get the speaker. Yeah, we're not ready to transform. It's key for WaterCare to ensure the delivery of services is as efficient as possible. We are a minimum cost provider. It's on our statement of intent. We are not the lowest cost provider. That's why you might see your rates going up every now and then. We are the minimum cost provider, so we need to be responsible about the investment we make. And there's still a lot of work to do on the grow. And if you follow Gartner's definition, yeah, we'll be less than 5%. But we're doing some internal transformations that don't actually match the Gartner, but that's basically the result. So if you have a program of work, do a quick exercise and look for how much money in your program of work you're spending in each one of those categories. If you don't have a good story for not doing Transform, for example, and we do, we actually haven't finished Project One. Remember, we still have a lot of technical debt, so we're not ready to transform. You can't really, unless you leapfrog, which is, we don't want to do, you don't actually want to talk about the Transform until you have your house in order. And we might never do, right? We are a traditional asset manager in the water utility. So we, unless we start selling shower heads and bathtubs that lift their lid so the drone can drop the chemicals inside, well, we are not going to transform very much at all. So in those 100 days, sorry, 100 weeks, you do need to have a little bit of structure that it goes beyond just the conversation with the business. And I use what I call the enterprise architecture value stream. Each stage of it, you need to deliver value to a particular stakeholder. So I go and have the conversation. I need to determine what is the organization driving towards, so I understand what is important. I need to understand the business. So those are my impacted capabilities in try to deliver the motivation of the organization. I need to understand how you do your work, so I need to analyze the process of interest, or at least the value streams. Then I need to plan for changing the situation so I can get the technology. So it's a long process before you should be talking about the technology. So where does the business start when they talk to IT?
Right at the end.
So they start with, I want this shiny toy. And not only I want this shiny toy, I want this shiny toy from this vendor that did a really good job selling to me. And by the way, it's software as a service, so you don't need to worry about it, and I signed the contract already. Never happens with us, but it could happen with you. The toolkit come into play again. So my enterprise motivation model, my capability model, the value streams, and then the services to technology mapping. Then I can have a conversation with the business. You know that shiny toy the guy sold you? Is not the best shiny toy. Look at this one. It's made out of tin with a little bit of cardboard. It's doing 80% of what you need for a fraction of the price. Do you want that? Oh, yeah. So a good conversation to have. So in doing that, the thing you need to establish, and we just really started to have that conversation with the business, as you saw in the beginning, is a journey, right? So we just started having the conversation at that level. You need to create a line of sight with the business in general. And Gartner uses those categories for the line of sight, where they take you from business strategy to enablers to principles to the business processes to how you're going to check and validate the fact that you actually deliver on your strategy. So Gartner talks about the line of sight as a way to ensuring that you're executing the strategy you defined on one side. And the main problem is you write a strategy and you never execute it. So the strategy is good as a statement of intent. It would, most of the time, if it's a good one, have a very strong roadmap and set of initiatives that are going to execute the strategy. And then you pick up that document, 150 pages, put on the drawer or on top of your desk so you can show to people and go and work with the wish list. And then said, how do I fit that in there? Oh, it would be really good to do that, I don't know, customer re-engineering that then requires a CRM. I don't have here. So you need to start providing that line of sight to the business so they see the impact. And what happens is you will end up with a lot of orphan projects that you need to fit. And then you need to ask the question, do you really need this one? Look at all the other things you need that are not in the plan. And in a way, shouldn't we be using the money better for those? So little star, and that relates to my tweet. Speaker, what does the State Services Commission calls or uses instead of line of sight to help with business cases in New Zealand? Three letters. Sorry? Yep, there's a technique inside that. Sorry? Okay, I'll give you the speaker if you remember the state. Yep, okay, you get the speaker. So he came from Australia, came from old days. You can come at the end if you want. I'll save it for you, unless I run away with it. So it's the investment logic map. So same approach, same network. Cranfield University in the old days talked about benefits dependency network, and we had tech ed talks about that. Same concept is the line of sight. Here's what you're trying to do. This is how I'm going to deliver it. And these are everything that you need to have in place in between. Very, very powerful. So now you have a document, which is your plan for IS, that talks about what you want to do. One slide. What is that impacting? Another slide. How you need to change your organization to be able to deliver those things? Another slide. A line of sight picture, maybe two or three, depending on how many business units you have. And then your portfolio, right? So 5-10 pages. Of course, you have lots and lots of material behind the scenes out of your conversations, out of your analysis, and you know, much more complex dependency networks or investment logic maps that you refer to, but the conversation is simple. Do have that conversation. Push somebody in the organization to have that conversation. So fast forward to where we are now. So we defined our baseline. We defined our business drivers, and that wasn't too hard because of the statement of intent. And I used that, went back to the business, and we defined per business unit what were their drivers. And it's interesting, it's really fascinating conversation because you go way past the IS is not working to, well, you know, we are a minimum cost provider, therefore we need to be very aware of our procurement processes, and we need to be more efficient in doing that as well. No IT. But now I know and I have context to everything I need to do in SAP. Workflow, changes to maybe the chart of accounts and how am I going to recognize the capitalization of the assets and the problem I have with business processes related to that because they're disconnected from the project to the commissioning of it to the operation. So I have the context for all of that out of a very simple conversation. So have that conversation, represent that back as a line of sight picture or as value streams. So extremely powerful. And I have the same thing for IS. So what are the enablers for IS? What are the things that we need to deliver? The interesting thing for IS is that if you put that in the context of the asset management plan, if you look at the Water KI statement of intent we need to deliver to our customers, healthy waterways, et cetera, a responsible asset manager, we only map to one element of the statement of intent, if you map to the definitions, which is responsible financial management. So the only thing that IS contributes directly to the statement of intent is managing our program of work responsibly as a minimum cost provider. So we need to deliver our projects responsibly, and that's it. So how do you justify the investment in IS in the context of an organization that has to, you know, very much a customer-facing, as you should be, set of KPIs? Well, you have to show the line of sight between what you deliver, which are your IT services, supporting your business services through the applications you have, so that you are delivering services to the business units that then are delivering services to their customers of Oakland or delivering water, et cetera. That's the line of sight for IS. That's how you justify investment in infrastructure. If I don't look after my data center or if I don't update my service management infrastructure, then all the people they are in the field providing maintenance are going to be badly supported in terms of their devices. Therefore, they are not going to collect information that is crucial for operations to know what's going on the network, that then can do the reliability assessment that then can create maintenance programs. If I don't manage my devices through MDM, through System Center, then all of that breaks. So the only way I get money to keep going with my assets and keep them up to date is to show the fact that if I don't do it, I'm going to break everything. They all know that, right? We are in IT. We always break everything. And we always stop everything. But that becomes a very clear picture to everybody, and then you can ask for money. So our strategy basically is four stages so that we can deliver a responsible program of work that is resulting in fit-for-purpose systems so that WaterCare can provide services to Oakland. And we're doing that in four stages, as you see there. The first stage is basically finishing project one, tidying up the things that we couldn't finish in time for the integration day. Then we are going to stabilize and consolidate. We still have two systems for asset management, for example. The system that manages the retail assets, small pipes and meters, and the systems that manage the big pipes and the dams and the treatment plants. We need a single asset management system to improve efficiency. And that retail asset management system is also responsible for a big chunk of our technical debt. Risk-driven decision-making ensured that we had to use what we had, which was probably not the shiniest system in the world. So, and it's preventing us delivering some types of service. So we need to address that technical debt, and we have time to do it. And now we have the plan to do that as well. Then we get into extending that and going to other areas where we can probably do better customer service. We can be more proactive in the channels that you use to pay your bill or to record a leaky meter just outside your property, et cetera. But until we kind of stabilize and consolidate, we don't have the basic elements in place to try to extend. And then we look for opportunities, and there's lots of things that a water company can do in relation to managing the network, for example, that at the moment it's just in the future for us. If you look for Smarter Cities, IBM website, they have really cool case studies in terms of smart networks, you know, sensors everywhere, so you know that a pipe is actually rusting because the sensor's measuring the water quality throughout the way. And then you got alarms, and then you go, oh, that pipe is rusting, so it might burst, or there is a leak because the pressure is dropping, and so on. So lots of opportunity there, but we are not there yet. And we back that plan with the line of sight that I described. So we have a line of sight for each business unit, how they are actually going to deliver their service, and how we can support them in terms of the current program of work. And we prioritize inside each one of those based on a set of criteria, and your mileage will vary. But we have the IS alignment there, and that's where I come in with the technical debt. That's where I can influence a little bit on what we do and when we do it. In the same way that the organization knows that if I don't go to that road in the next year and a half and dig out the pipe and put either sleeve inside or replace the whole pipe, it's going to burst and it's going to be a mess. So if anybody lives St. Helier's Coe Way, there's big work going on down St. Helier's Bay Road, that's it. Need to replace and recover before it blows, right? And it's much cheaper if you do at that time. So this is what our current plan looks like from a picture point of view, and the names protect the innocent. but as you can see, there is a big project there, and that's basically our asset management system, the big business applications addressing technical debt and better services as well. So that's a key component of what we're trying to do. And the rest is kind of the middle of the road, right? And the priority and how we're addressing them, it's either because we're addressing the business problem or because we need to address the technical debt. So if you've been in a mergers and acquisition situation, one of the key things you do is join networks, right? So that's hard. Now imagine joining eight with control systems on top and business systems and different connectivity, you know, anything from ADSL to line of sight radio networks to maybe one thread of copper linking two sites. And we cover everything from Warkworth to the Bombays. So it is quite a big exercise for us to actually provide a fit-for-purpose network that is efficient at the minimum cost. We can carry on as we are, and there won't be any problem. But the cost of maintaining that is actually quite high. So we do want to address that as well. So it's one of the elements of the technical debt there. So the plan is a guide, and you need to change it when you find out that things change. As an example, our drivers are changing because there has been new legislation or regulation coming down that is forcing us to rethink the KPIs of the statement of intent. So we are going to have to look at the line of sight and see what is the impact of that change down the track and on the projects we're doing. And that will happen. A public organization, those priorities will change. And in your case, the priorities will change as well, and you need to make sure that you are nimble enough to change the plan. A good plan is a plan you can change, not a plan that you have to, you know, follow to the letter of the law for that financial year just because you had the plan. There was a recent conversation when we were told, oh, and by the way, we're changing our focus from X to Y, and said, okay, we just changed the plan. What? Yeah, we just changed the plan. Oh, okay. And it was a big surprise, and I wonder till today, why was it a big surprise? IS didn't push back. We can change the plan, and you should change the plan if the priorities change. So, final thoughts. I believe that I am a trader. I get paid to have opinions. So I provide advice, guidance, direction, solutions, and that's basically the nature of my job. So the organization hired me to have opinions. So have opinions, but when you have opinion, make sure you're backed by that line of sight so you can justify the opinions you have, and you have all the detail behind the scenes so you can keep bringing them up to justify what you do. But I'm basically a trader. I trade the money they give me to good advice. If I don't do that, somebody else will come in and do it for me. So I'll get consultants coming in and doing that for me, which basically, okay, they can complement what I'm doing, and that's fantastic, and we do use them all the time. But I should know better in terms of my organization. If I don't, and I cannot provide that advice, then I'm not doing my job properly. So EAs are traders, or architects are traders in general. Now, the next two things you do need to watch for. We love tools. I love technology. And I love the tools. And I love boxes and lines and drawings and things that don't make sense to anybody but me and my team. OIS. The business doesn't care. They don't care if you're using system architect, enterprise architect, iServer, Truth. They don't care. They don't want to see it. They want you to tell them that life is going to be better because we are going to do this in this way, and that's the benefit they're going to get, and that's going to solve a problem for them. So, yep, use your tools. Don't make them the reason for having an architecture team. And the next one is associated to that. Do not show anybody your ADM and where you are and the fact that you need to have a request for architecture work before you can do anything and that you're going to produce a reference architecture for financial management in the organization supported by a capability model that is addressing this value chain and the fact that the systems are not supporting that particular capability. They don't care, again. They just want a summary of that. But you do need to know those things. So use the frameworks as to support the work you do, but be careful when you surface them up. Don't show them as the Zuckerman matrix and where you are in a particular area of the business in the various dimensions. And I see a lot of people smiling in there, and I hope you're smiling because you've seen somebody else doing it. Because it tends to be that way. I worked with a particular customer when I was consulting, and I still use this as an example with everybody I know. We got a report. It was, I think, it was 180 pages, and there were like six or seven different models, business models, and frameworks they were using to justify different parts, and they were all disconnected. So you look at the model and a picture and the description and an assessment, and then you look at the next one, and it's a different picture, assessment, different model, and you say, well, how does this relate to the other one? And there were eight of them, roughly. And then I said, can we have an executive summary? We got an executive summary. It was 35 pages. So people that worked with me and keep seeing in the business, they remember exactly that case, and we all laugh. But there was what was provided. So don't be one of those. Don't be a tool maker and a tool user and a framework user. Be an architect that is providing simple solutions to everybody in the business, and you're seen as somebody that has good opinions and good advice, and therefore you are worth all the megabucks you paid. So, and that's basically it. Some suggestion sessions there. I'll be around. You want to ask questions? I think we have 2 minutes. And thank you very much.